What's happening, hardscapers? This is episode 89 of the How to Hardscape podcast, where we talk to you about how you can start and grow your hardscaping business. And today we have back-to-back episodes on personal finance. This is a topic that I really enjoy talking about, really enjoy getting into, and I've learned a lot from these two guests that we have on these back-to-back episodes. One episode is tailored specifically for Canadians and the other for Americans, but both of these episodes have excellent advice beyond just being for Canadians or Americans. There's business topics and finance topics all mixed in throughout, and especially at the end of these episodes. So I strongly urge you to listen to both of these episodes, regardless of if you're Canadian, American, or wherever you are listening to this in the world, because there's a lot of great advice on personal finance, as well as getting into some business finance. And in this episode, we are joined by Cornell Schreiber of the Build Wealth Canada podcast, and he talks with us again about personal finance for Canadians. So without further ado, here's our interview with Cornell Schreiber. Today, we're joined by Cornell Schreiber. He is the host of the Build Wealth Canada show, and he's been featured for paying off his mortgage in only 6 years while still in his 20s and becoming one of the Canada's youngest retirees at age 32. He now runs a top personal finance and investing podcast, and he's created specifically for Canadians, as well as Canada's largest personal finance and investing conference. There, he interviews the top personal finance experts to share their best practices, tips, and tactics when it comes to investing and financial planning in Canada. Cornell has been a big part of me getting into personal finance with the Build Wealth Canada show, and it's been great to listen along to you for these past few years, Cornell, and really dive into personal finance for myself. So I'm really honored to have you on the show to talk personal finance for contractors. Thank you so much for joining us.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for having me. This is great. I'm looking forward to it.
Cornell, let's just get started here. To get to know a little bit more about yourself, what brought you into personal finance? What brought you to become one of Canada's youngest retirees?
Well, I didn't particularly like my job in a cubicle. So that, I find that's a pretty good motivator for a lot of people. Being early retired, you know, sounded very appealing. And I remember stumbling upon Mr. Money Mustache, who's, you know, anybody that's into personal finance and the early retirement sort of community knows who that is. And, you know, I read some of his, I somehow got onto one of his articles, and this light bulb went off in my head, like, wait a minute, you can actually retire early. This is possible. I didn't think it was really possible. And so I went into his math. I started doing my own math and thought, oh, this is actually pretty amazing. So that was kind of the very beginning of it all. The motivation is there. I didn't particularly love the job. And so I didn't want to keep doing it forever. Always wanted to kind of work for myself instead. That definitely, you know, everybody wants to be able to do what they want to do as opposed to have to go to work and clock their hours, that kind of a thing. So that was kind of how it all started.
Awesome. And then what brought you to start the Build Wealth Canada podcast? Where does that kind of align in your story?
Sure. Yeah. So what happened is when I graduated in 2007 from university, and as probably everyone recalls, that was pretty much right before the big financial crisis that we had. And so the whole story was that, you know, we're fresh out of university, we've got money that we're ready to save or invest, and then we see the stock market just completely tank. And so I'm seeing my people I respect that are mentoring me kind of freaking out. They're losing, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars, depending how much they have. And so I basically thought, okay, this stock investing thing seems really risky. I mean, that's a lot of money they just lost. And so this was one of the biggest mistakes I made, is I basically said, okay, this is not for me, this whole investing thing. It just seems way too risky. I'm just going to focus on paying down my mortgage. And so that's what my wife and I did. And so we basically we were dual income right straight out of university. And so the way we structured things is that one of us basically took care of all the day-to-day expenses, and the other one basically pumped as much money as we could into paying off the mortgage. And that's not something I would recommend. If I was to do it all again, I definitely would not have done that. We would be a lot wealthier today if, instead of doing that, I actually plowed money into the markets, because they were at, you know, such a low, and I would have been able to ride that wave up, and we had such a good recovery there. You know, so knowing what I know now, I would not have done that. But that's what we did. And so, I mean, one positive though is that, yeah, we were, you know, in our high 20s and we had our mortgage paid off. So that's great. And after that, there was really no place to hide anymore. I couldn't just say, okay, ignore the investing, pump money into the mortgage. Well, the mortgage is gone. And then we're like, oh, we're actually behind on retirement now because we haven't really been saving, right? And for retirement. And so I thought, okay, what if I started a podcast where I interview different experts on investing and try to learn best practices from them? Because I need to start saving for retirement. You can't just not save for retirement. You don't want to be just subject to only living on what the government is nice enough to give you, basically, right? And so I started interviewing the different experts, learning it, started investing myself, applying those best practices. Fast forward several years, and then we actually ended up becoming one of Canada's earliest retirees, which is really nice. And so that's been an interesting journey because I went from, semi-retirement to full retirement. Turns out full retirement isn't very fulfilling when you're in your early 30s. And so that I would say I'm back to semi-retirement where I run the podcast, I run the summit, but then that's it. I don't do, so these are just fun things to do. And it's really enjoyable because I get to talk to really, really smart people. And there's always, something to optimize, something new to learn, right? And so I interview people, learn their lessons, apply it to my own portfolio so that we can grow our wealth and our investments. But then I share it basically with everyone else as well so that everybody else can benefit from those lessons. So it's a nice kind of win-win across the board. And it's worked out really well. It's been one of, if not the pretty much like the top ranking Canadian personal finance investing podcast for quite a few years now. And then the summits, pretty much the largest summit specifically for Canadians as well. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
It's exactly what I'm trying to do with this podcast and to just get out accessible content to these contractors and to help them grow their business. And then bringing you on the show to talk about personal finance, to help them grow, their personal stability beyond their business. So let's get into that with Canadians and talking about personal finance and investing for Canadians. Where do you recommend people to start when first thinking about personal finance?
Sure. Yeah. So if we're talking specifically about investing, I'm very much an index investor. So I don't do any stock picking. I don't recommend for people to do stock picking. I mean, if someone wants that to be their craft, where that's what they're going to focus on and they're going to be, they're going to be the best at that and that's their passion, then great. But most people, that's such a small percentage of people, right? Most people aren't like that. Your audience, I assume, is not like that. They're contractors, like you said. So they're probably not looking to spend, dozens of hours every week on their investments, right? And so I'm very much big on just index investing, just buying ETFs, which, I can get into details on that and what that is. But basically just buying the market as a whole across the entire world so that you're diversified in terms of geography as well and diversified, when it comes to the sector as well. And then putting money into your TFSAs, your RRSPs, your ESP if you have children as well. And we can talk about that as well if you want to know kind of which one to pick, because it can be pretty overwhelming, I think, for some people, especially if someone's new to all of this.
Definitely. So especially with us, and myself personally, and I know a lot of guys in the industry, when you're a business owner, you really don't have the time to invest into that stock picking, right? To have to research all these businesses and put the time into being that expert on that business to know that you're putting the money in the right business. So an ETF might be something worth checking out. Can we get into what is an ETF? What does that mean when we put our money into an ETF?
Sure. So it stands for exchange traded funds. And basically the way I look at it is it's a basket of investments essentially. And so an ETF can contain just stocks, it can contain just bonds, or it can contain a combination of the two. There's ETFs that have other ETFs within them. So that's kind of another thing. But, generally speaking, it's a basket of goods. And so for instance, to give you an example, if you wanted to hold an ETF that is meant to be a representation of, let's say, the Canadian market or the US market. So you could have an ETF for that. And that ETF, for example, in the case of the US, it could hold thousands of individual stocks within it. And so it's a very easy and practical way to invest, because if you're trying to buy an ETF that represents the US market as a whole, there's thousands of companies in there. You're not going to, imagine trying to buy thousands of companies, right? It's not very practical, right? You look up each ticker, buy this, buy that, and then rebalancing them, it would be a complete nightmare. And so an ETF just lets you make it where you're buying one ETF. You can even just have your whole portfolio just buying a single ETF, because there's different types of ETFs out there, which we can get into. But it makes it very easy where it's the same sort of process as buying a stock. So if anybody listening that has ever purchased a stock, using through their banking website, through their brokerage, is the same kind of process. But instead of buying one individual company, you follow that process, but now you own thousands of companies, and the same thing goes for bonds as well. So that's really the way that I invest, because you basically get instant diversification. The fees are incredibly low. Not all ETFs are passive. So some basically are active, which essentially means there's people that manage those ETFs where they are trying to pick stocks and they're trying to beat the market. So I don't recommend those. That's not how I personally invest. I just buy the market as a whole, or a representation of the market as a whole. And when you do it that way, it is extremely passive, because you basically are buying the same one ETF a month or the same four ETFs a month, and then you're basically done. And so it's very much sort of a hands-off thing. And like you said, your audience is very much business owners. And, I have a podcast, I run the summit. I ran a small business before that for 9 years. So I get it. You're busy with your business. You probably don't want to be spending hours every week doing this, right? Reading financial statements, things of that nature. And so I think just index investing through ETFs can be a really good route for some people. And that's literally where we have an overwhelming majority of our net worth is basically that. Like, apart from the house, pretty much everything is in ETFs, plus like a little cash cushion that we have for just day-to-day expenses.
Gotcha. So ETF, you mentioned passive and active. Would an active come with more fees, as you said. Is that more comparable to, say, like a mutual fund, that people would be more recognizable with that name as opposed to an ETF?
Sure. And I mean, there's passive mutual funds as well. But yeah, like an ETF is I would say, similar to a mutual fund. There are some differences. But yeah, like there's passive mutual funds, there's active mutual funds, there's passive ETFs, there's active ETFs. But I think generally speaking, if you talk to someone and you say, hey, what do you think a mutual fund is? I think a lot of people will associate a mutual fund with being something that is active, because that's usually how they're sold, and those are pushed really hard, because then the fees are higher, the companies are making more money off them than these passive index ETFs. And so that's what we hear about, right, as retail investors. And so, yeah, you can definitely, I would say, yeah, if you're thinking of mutual funds, you're probably thinking of an active one, because those are, I would say, the most common, because they have the higher fees, because that's what get pushed. Whereas an ETF, yeah, very, very similar to a mutual fund. It's just a basket of investments. But the big thing with them is that typically, especially in Canada, the fees are a lot lower. I mean, by far. And so every dollar you save in fees is a dollar that's basically automatically invested. Because these fees, it's not like you're writing them a check every month or every year. They're automatically deducted. And so if that fee is smaller, it's now not being automatically deducted. It's basically automatically invested. And so that's going to help your wealth grow a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's huge information. When I heard that through your podcast, and it's talked about often in the personal finance space, is that ETF and the low expense that comes with those can add up and be such a tremendous amount. Now, when it comes to purchasing those ETFs or bonds or whatever we're purchasing, let's get into the different accounts that we can get into, because growing up, I always heard, it's RRSP season, I'm going to go buy some RRSPs.
Right.
And that's the common thing that you hear. So let's talk about, TFSAs, RRSPs, RESPs. What are these? What do they mean for Canadians, and what are we doing with them?
Yeah, you brought up a great point. I mean, I think the big thing, especially if you're new to all this, to kind of wrap your head around, is that an ESP and RRSP, a TFSA, those are all, think of them as buckets. So they're not actually investments. And a lot of people, for instance, with TFSA, they think that, that's just like a savings account. So I open one up with my bank, I'm going to get my 2% or whatever, whatever they're offering you. And that's basically it. Just they view it the same way as a high interest savings account. But that's not really what it is. I mean, you can buy products like that, where you open up a TFSA with a bank, but you're going to get a relatively low interest rate compared to the sort of returns you can get if you just invest in the market. So in your TFSA, you can hold ETFs. In your RRSP, you can hold ETFs. In your RESP, you can hold ETFs. And so that's the big thing to sort of remember, that these are just buckets in terms of, because they differ in how they are taxed by the government. And so you can have there's a huge amount of things you can have in there. You can have individual stocks in there. You can have ETFs. You can have mutual funds in there, just a whole variety. So that's one really important thing to keep in mind. And then, yeah, in terms of, so what was the second part of your question too? Like, where, when do you pick which one?
Yeah, like what is a TFSA? What does it do for you as opposed to, say, an RRSP? And what are the differences in them? And yeah.
Sure. Yeah, sounds good. So with a TFSA, it, you put money into it using after-tax dollars. So you receive a check from work, or if, you know, if it's your business, you know, once that money's been taxed and it's kind of in your pocket, ready to go, you can spend it at the store, whatever the case may be, that's the kind of money you would use for your TFSA. And any returns you get on that, any dividends you receive, any capital gains, so when that appreciates in value, when you take that out, it's basically going to be tax-free. So it's not going to, you know, so you could have made, let's say you made over a long period of time, you've made $100,000, you know, we'll call profit in your TFSA. You know, when you take that $100,000 out, that doesn't impact your income tax at all. And so that's a really, really nice thing about the TFSA. With the RRSP, it's different because it's used, it's you put money into it using pre-tax dollars. And so, you know, with your audience specifically, because it's contractors, maybe I'm guessing a lot of them are self-employed. That's a bit of a different thing, especially if you own a corporation. You know, it can get a little bit complicated. And so in that case, you do want to, you know, run these numbers with an actual accountant or a financial planner to see how this applies to your situation. Because if you have a corporation, you know, there's certain tax strategies you can do there versus your personal income taxes. And so that, you know, it does get more complicated. But in the traditional sense, when someone has an RRSP, it's because they, like, let's say you're a contractor and you're working for a company and, you know, they might do some RRSP matching, you know, you get certain money, you can basically use an RRSP to lower your taxable income. And so the big thing to remember between the RRSP and TFSA, a lot of people wonder, well, which one do I put money in first? If I've got $5,000 to invest or $1,000 to invest, do I do RRSP? Do I do TFSA? And the general rule is that pretty much if you're making under $49,000 a year, the TFSA is the better choice. And that the reason it's $49,000 is because that's where you're already in the lowest tax bracket. If you are above $49,000, you are no longer in the lowest tax bracket. And so when you put money into your RRSP, like let's say you lowest tax bracket's around $49,000. Let's say you made $50,000. So if you put $1,000 into your RRSP, that basically lowers your income for that year to $49,000. And so that $1,000 you basically got to invest, and it lowered you to $49,000. So you never actually paid any tax at that higher tax bracket. And so that's where the RRSP can be very helpful. So, like, I guess just to give you a more real life example. So what my wife and I did is when we were in our accumulation phase, so we were saving for early retirement, we both made more than $49,000 a year, but we were also saving a lot. And so what we would do is we would pump money into our RRSP to basically lower our income to get us down to that $49,000, which is that lowest tax bracket. And so even though her and I were both making enough money to be, you know, in a higher tax bracket, we were actually only getting taxed at the lowest tax bracket. And then what happens is when you are in retirement, chances are you're going to be in the lowest tax bracket as well. And so that's basically what we did, because $49,000 for you, $49,000 for your spouse, that's almost $100,000. When you're in retirement, that's going to, realistically, that's going to be enough for you to live off, because your mortgage is probably paid off. Your kids are no longer, you know, dependents, right? They're off on their own, that kind of a thing. And so, you know, $100,000 a year, I would argue is a, you know, a pretty good amount of money, right? So you're basically going to be in the lowest tax bracket in retirement. And so that's what we did, where, you know, we're working, and while we're working, we're in the lowest tax bracket. When we're retired, we're still in the lowest tax bracket. And I mean, you know, so that savings there are very, very substantial.
And with an RRSP, we're going to eventually be paying back those taxes. So it's important when you get that tax refund to use that wisely, right? Because that's the benefit of the RRSP, I would assume.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, when you get that tax refund from your RRSP, what you're supposed to do is actually invest that, right? You pump that money in, and that's how you get these really significant tax advantages. So definitely, you know, the RRSP refund you get is not sort of free spending money. It's not like a treat or whatever. That's, you know, in order for to really take advantage of what the RRSP offers with these different tax brackets and, you know, getting taxed less and all that, you really have to pump that money, you know, back in into to investing it. So definitely that, yeah, that's a very, very, I'm glad you mentioned that, because yeah, that's a really critical point. It's not like, you know, vacation money or anything like that, you know, assuming you want to optimize your investments, right? And the tax savings you get.
Absolutely. And then one account that I don't know much of, because I myself don't have kids yet, is RESP, the education plan. When would we use that if we would ever think about doing that?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's definitely a good idea. And it's a judgment call on your end, right? You go, do you want to pump? Like, let's say you, I mean, if you have enough money where you can do RESP and your TFSA and your RSP, I mean, that's fantastic. Great. Not everybody, probably most people aren't in that situation, right? Where they can max out their RSP, max out their TFSA, and, you know, put in $2,500 a year per kid into their RESP. So you have to kind of decide which one are you going to prioritize, the RESP for the kids, which is basically money intended for their post-secondary education, or do you prioritize your retirement savings? But definitely, you know, the RESP should be on your radar. And you know, the big reason for it is that when you put money into it, basically the government's going to give you, if you basically the max amount you can put in is $2,500 a year. You don't have to put in that full amount. You can put in less than that. But basically the government's going to give you 20% sort of on, you know, on top of what you put in. And so if the max, since the maximum amount is $2,500 per year, that means if you actually put that in to your RESP, you're going to get $500 per year. For that year, you're going to get that $500 for free, literally from the government for your kid. So that's a pretty sweet deal, because, you know, nowhere else do you just get 20%. You know, you put in, let's say, $2,500, and the government just says, okay, here you go. Here's $500. Here's a sort of instant 20% return on that money you just put in. I mean, that's a really, really good deal that the government has put in. So it's definitely wonderful. I definitely have it for my kids. I try to, you know, I max it out every year as well. Definitely a good idea, because yeah, 20% return is pretty hard to beat. If your kids don't end up going to school, there's different ways you can get the money out. It's not like, you know, you put the money in there, turns out your kid doesn't want to go to post-secondary and you lose all that money. That's not how it works. So you don't have to really worry about that component. The one thing that I will say is definitely with RESP, the best way to do it is just to do it yourself, where you open up an account through a discount brokerage or through your bank, and you just choose. So like the way I do it, I just buy an ETF that represents sort of, you know, the stock market as a whole, and I just buy that for the RESP. So it's very, very straightforward. It's very easy to do yourself. There's a lot of companies that will try to get you to invest with them, and there are these, you know, different RESP companies, and they're like, oh well, we'll help you, we'll set it all up for you, it's very easy, yada, yada, yada. But the problem with a lot of these companies is that the fees are a lot higher, and they place really massive restrictions on you, where if you don't comply perfectly to the rules, you could actually miss out on a lot of money, a lot of your gains. And so, you know, I really, they make it really easy for you. They, you know, they might even say, I find one friend who said, they'll say things like, don't you care about your kid's education? Well, why aren't you signing up with us, kind of thing? And it's like, you know, really sort of predatory sales tactics. You're not saying they're all like that, but you've got to be really careful. The easiest way is just to open up an RESP yourself, you know, through your discount brokerage, you buy the ETFs within that. And then that way you're getting the lowest fees, you get maximum flexibility. It's great. And you don't have these extra rules that you have to abide to. So definitely sort of a big thing to remember for that.
Yeah. And does that work as well as like an RSP with before tax money, or is that after tax money, like a TFSA that you'd be putting into RSP? How does that work?
Yeah. So it is after tax money that goes into that. Yeah. But I mean, the way you open it, like if you go to like I use Questrade, for example. So when you go to open an account with them, there's selections. You can say, okay, I want to open up an RSP account, TFSA. The RESP is one of them right there. So set up a family RESP, make sure it's a family one. And then in terms of the mechanics, it's the same way as if you were to invest within your TFSA or within your RSP. But with the exception, the really cool thing being that when you put, let's say, you know, 25, like, so we have two kids, right? So at least recently I put in $5,000 because at the start of a new year, right? So I can put in a $5,000 more. So I did that. And then shortly after, I got like, I think it was a few days after, I get a message saying, okay, there's been $1,000 deposited into your account. You know, just like that, basically $1,000 free money from the government that I can now invest. So, you know, definitely something to have on your radar. Cause yeah, it's not every day the government is just like, here's a grand.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, definitely someone to think about. But like I said, do it yourself. Be really careful with some of these companies out there, because it's very predatory. I have a family member that got suckered into one of these, and they had a really horrible experience and they lost a lot of money on it. So just be very careful is all I really want to say about that.
Yeah. And Cornell, you mentioned Questrade, and I think it's important that our audience knows these different tools that they have available to them to invest their money or to, you know, open up a high interest savings account that's out there. I know that you talk about this on your show. Do you have any, can you talk a little bit about Questrade? Can you talk a little bit about other bank accounts that are alternatives to, say, the big five in Canada that you recommend people to check out?
Sure. Specifically for investing in the TFSA.
Yeah. Whatever you kind of would recommend people to go check out that they might not know too much about at this point.
Okay, sure. So for buying the actual ETFs, both for my RESP, RRSP, TFSA, and we have a taxable account as well because we ended up maxing out our other accounts. I just use Questrade. I don't work for them or anything like that. But the reason I chose them a long time ago is because they let you buy ETFs for free, which is really, really nice. There are these things called ECN fees, but it's like literally pennies. So it's I would say it's still free. It's negligible. When you go through some of these other providers, some of these other brokerages, they typically charge anywhere from $5 to $10 per trade, which can really add up. I know when I was in the accumulation phase, I would basically buy the same four ETFs every single month. And so let's say I'm getting charged $10 a trade, that's $40 a month, right? Just in trading costs, right? That adds up over the course of a year, you know, and if I don't have to endure that, why would I, right? And so that was one of the reasons I went with Questrade because I can basically buy them for pennies or for free in terms of the commission. So that's been a really good choice. They also have good integration with a tool I like called Passive. And they basically give you some really, really good reporting that I like to use, and they help you out with rebalancing. I'm not sure if that's like beyond the scope of this podcast, but yeah, they have, I'm a big fan of a company called Passive, where they help me with the reporting and double check my numbers for rebalancing. So that's what I use for that. In terms of other tools that I use, in terms of the accounts, so I use EQ Bank for my basically the high interest savings account. So when I want some money sort of on hand, that's what I use. And now they recently opened up an RSP, and they have an RSP and TFSA account that you can have with them now too. It will not let you buy individual ETFs or buy ETFs. Like, so this would be strictly if, I don't know, you don't have enough money to invest, you're saving money for, I don't know, a car because your current one is about to break down or something like that, you know, then you could put money in there. You'll get like 2.something% just as a temporary thing to keep the money ultra safe, because you know you have a big purchase coming up. But yeah, typically, you know, when it comes to like the way I invest my own money, yeah, invest as much as I can, which I do through Questrade. And then for just sort of day-to-day spending cash, I do like EQ because they have the highest rate, and it's that I've been able to find. It's free and it's really good. So those are the tools that I use. And I guess, yeah, I'll do a plug for a guide that I have, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
It might help some people too. So yeah, and I'm sure you've heard this on the show a million times. But yeah, like I use them a lot. And what I did is I'm affiliated with them now, because I'm going to be recommending them to people anyway, because that's what I use. So I ended up setting an affiliate thing with them where I created a guide on all the ETFs that I personally buy and why I chose them, because there's literally thousands of ETFs out there. And so a common question is, okay, this is pretty overwhelming. How do I know what's the right one? And you should obviously do your own, you know, due diligence, do your own research and all that. But I mean, to help you sort of say, okay, well, if Cornell's investing in this, maybe I should look into these to see if they're a good fit for me also. So if you sign up with them, it's buildwealthcanada.ca/EQ. If you do that, basically that's going to take you to their page. You can sign up there for free. Like I said, that's the account that I use. It's the highest rate that I've been able to find. And then the way I have it structured is if you email me over at bonus@buildwealthcanada.ca, what I'll do is, like, with a confirmation that you signed up with them, basically you'll automatically get this the guide that I made on what ETFs I buy and why. And so that's just, yeah, something that I basically put together because I get asked that question a lot. and so this way sort of everybody wins and everyone's happy with it. So I'll mention that because I'm talking about ETFs, but it's like, okay, when you actually want to invest and you're staring at several thousand ETFs, it can be a little overwhelming. So at least this way you're like, well, this is where Cornell has his entire portfolio. So that I think that's going to help people out.
It's going to, yeah, it's a good start, especially with so much on the market, just knowing what somebody else is investing in and then just starting with those companies and starting their research from there is awesome. So thank you for mentioning that. And coming to more questions about personal finance, you mentioned at the beginning your mortgage. Looking back on it, you probably wouldn't have paid it down right away. So I kind of have something similar when it comes to business. And for us, it would be purchasing equipment in our business. And you know, we can take out these loans that are less than 2% all the way down to sometimes 0% for a machine. But some people are opposed to, you know, taking out loans and having debt, especially in their business. But what do you say? What's your opinion on, say, does it make sense to take on debt that is below 2%, even if you can afford that full payment of the machine, because maybe you can invest that money that you do have sitting aside and earn more than 2% on it per year in the market. Same thing with a mortgage. You know, does it make sense to hold on to that mortgage? Because even if you can pay off a significant portion, you can use that money to invest in the market. What's your opinion on all that?
Yeah, so there's the mathematically correct answer, and then there's the we're human, and so it depends to answer. So mathematically, the answer is yes. I mean, right now the interest rates are so low, and like you said, you know, if you're getting something like under 2%, that is a very low amount that you could easily be, I would say, long term with market returns. And so, you know, mathematically, if you're just strictly saying, okay, I want to maximize my wealth, you know, what's the highest probability of me maximizing it? I would say, yeah, for sure. You can, you know, take on that 2% debt or less. Same the case with the mortgage, right? Rates are extremely low. Instead of paying that down quicker, let's instead invest it in the markets, you know, that kind of a thing. So yeah, mathematically, I would say you would be, and you know, if you look at historically what's happened and all that, yeah, you would be better off taking advantage of these low interest rates and taking the extra cash sort of that you do have and actually investing it. So, and I mean, just to give you some sort of context, when you're looking at market returns and specifically in equity, so bonds are kind of a different animal because they're also, you know, very low interest rates now. You're not going to get a lot for those. But if we're looking at, you know, equity specifically, so stocks, the number that I like to use is around 8% that you that you can typically expect per year on your equities. And keep in mind, it's not like a straight line. Some years, you know, you're going to be at like 20%. Others, you could be down 30%. Like when COVID happened, I mean, you know, my portfolio dropped something like 30%, right? So, I mean, you're going to have these really, you know, these giant sort of fluctuations. But over the long term, I'm expecting 8 based on what I've seen. You know, some people will, financial planners will use 6 to be really, really conservative. Others will use more than that, you know, but even if we just go with 8, I mean, compare that, that's what you can get. Whereas debt, you're paying, let's say 2%, you know, that's a pretty big spread that you can take advantage of. So that's my reasoning for, yeah, for sure. Mathematically makes total sense. As long as you're investing in equities, don't take on that debt, that, you know, that 2% debt and then plow it into bonds that are going to pay you, you know, to like, let's say 2% or less, right? Or plow that into a high interest savings account that's going to, you know, pay you, you know, 1.5% or 2%, right? Like then the math doesn't really work that well. But if you're doing equities, then for sure. So that's sort of the mathematical side. Because we're human, however, that's not always the decision everyone's going to make, because you have to sort of put yourself in a scenario where, okay, let's say you did that. Let's say you could have bought this machine, this piece for your equipment, or, you know, and you could have just bought it with cash or whatever, you'd be fine. But instead you took on that debt and you invested the money instead. Great. Then we had COVID happen recently. Like I said, drops, depending on which market you're looking at, 30%, 40%. They've totally recovered since then. And the markets are actually doing really incredible now. And they do tend to recover. Most sort of, you know, giant drops like that, they do typically recover within 2 years. So, you know, if you're willing to hold on, you're fine. Traditionally, that's always been the case. But, you know, think about it. When COVID happened, the sky was falling, and maybe some people had a really rough time with their business, right? Because their clients canceled because they were afraid of COVID. We've had different restrictions. So imagine that happened to you, where, okay, you took on that debt, you invested that money, and then those investments that you made, they dropped 30%, right? So you're like, okay, well, that's obviously not very pleasant. At that point, you're like, I guess I should have put it, should have bought that equipment with cash instead. And while that's happening, and while it looks like the, you know, sky is falling, you still have to make interest payments on that machine, right? Or on the house, right? And so that is a very uncomfortable situation psychologically, right? Because not only have the money you invested dropped significantly, but you also still have to pay interest on the money, right? That you wouldn't have had to do if you actually just bought it with cash or whatever. So, you know, so that's why there's sort of that human side where, you know, can you handle that, right? And so the question then I think is, are you able to ride it out, right? Are you able to stomach that and say, yeah, they're down 30%, 40%. You know, if you're doing index investing like what I'm doing, they've always recovered. And so, can I just ride that out? Because I know over the long term being defined as like 10 years plus, I know I'll be fine, or historically I'll be fine. There's an extremely high chance that I will be totally fine because historically that's always been the case. You know, and so can you handle that? Or are you going to freak out and say, this is ridiculous. I just lost 30%. I'm paying interest. I lost clients at my job, you know, through my company. I'm going to have less money coming in. You know what? Forget this. I'm out. Like, this is not for me. And then you basically sell at the bottom when your investments are down 30%. And as soon as you sell when they're down, you've basically locked in your losses. When the markets are down 30%, you didn't actually really lock in that loss until you sold, right? And so that's something that you really, really have to keep in mind, right? Yeah. So like, again, you know, can you be mathematical and rational when, you know, things hit the fan, or are knowing yourself, is there a chance that you're going to freak out, get nervous, get anxiety, have trouble sleeping at night because of these things that do happen, right? So you really got to sort of ask yourself, I think, that question, because the answer is going to be, yeah, definitely let's take on debt for some people. And for other people, they're like, no, I don't want the stress. I don't want to deal with that. Just want to buy with cash, done deal. You know what I mean? So it really depends on the person.
Yeah, that's a great way to break it down, those two sides to it. Now, another thing that I struggle with my business and investing for my future is sometimes I think that if I take this money and I invest it in my business, I'm going to get a better ROI on that than if I were to put it in the market. Now, obviously, with the way the market's been this year, you know, it's big gains if you bought at the bottom, and that might not be the case. But like you said, overall, over a long term, 8% per year, if I take that money and I put it into my business, I feel sometimes that I'm going to get a greater return on investment. So how do I break down that balance of, is there something that I should look at in terms of, you know what, if I allocate just a little bit of money to the market, it's out of my hands. It's somebody else doing it for me and making that return for me for my retirement, as opposed to, you know, investing in my business. What is that balance that I should strike there?
Sure. Yeah. So first off, definitely you can earn a higher ROI in your business versus investing in the markets 100%. Because if you're investing in your business, I mean, there really is no limit pretty much in terms of how much you can earn and how much your business can grow, right? I mean, so that's nice. You can definitely have a higher ROI there. Like I said, 8%, let's say, even if you're using that, you can make a lot more than 8% in your business. So definitely a pro for invest in your business, just, you know, reinvest your profits, all that, keep growing it. Definitely, that's great. Let's look at both sides as well. So the downside, however, is that with your business, you also shouldn't just blindly say, I should always invest money in my business no matter what, because it's always going to get a higher ROI, because it's not, right? I mean, you're running a business. There are certain risks involved with that. And when you invest in your business, you may put money into something that you think is going to work out great, and then it completely fails and you actually lose money, and that money that you invested could very well go to zero, right? Or, you know, or you may get a negative like 75% return on the money. And then you're like, okay, this idea clearly failed. I lost 75%, you know, of what I put in. And I'm okay, I guess it failed, right? Whereas in the markets, that's not gonna really happen, right? So, and depending on what you're investing in, but if you're an index investor like myself, where you're buying basically a, you know, Canadian representation, a representation of the Canadian market and the US market and international markets, when you do that, you're literally buying thousands of companies across the entire world. And, you know, big companies, small companies, mid-sized companies, everywhere, right? Huge diversification. And, you know, what are the chances? That's another thing people get nervous about investing. And I remember when I was in high school, that was my thought. I was like, oh, I'm scared of investing because what if I lose all my money? Well, yeah, if you're picking individual companies, that could very well happen, right? You buy some penny stock, it goes, you know, the company goes bankrupt, you're done, you lost all your money. If you're index investing, though, when you're buying basically representation of the market as a whole, you're not really going to go bankrupt. It's not like all of a sudden Facebook goes bankrupt and Microsoft goes bankrupt and Tesla goes bankrupt and, like, you know, everyone go, that doesn't happen, right? You're not going to have, like, something insane would have to happen for all the companies to all of a sudden, like, you know, it's like the whole system, basically it would be like a collapse of society, you know, for like some Armageddon kind of scenario maybe, right? And so that's, I would say, the positive with the index investing piece is that you're not going to lose everything, right? If you invest it properly, right? So yes, you're getting a smaller return than if you could get in your business, but you're getting some safety in terms of diversification. If you do it properly, it's not going to go to zero. And the other big consideration too is that if you're index investing, it's very passive, right? You're getting that, let's say, 8% annualized, you know, you're getting that. It takes very, very little if you're a passive index investor, so you're not stock picking, to get that. You do very, very little work to get that. It's fantastic. Versus in your business, yeah, you can get more, but you know, you got to work for it, right? You're taking on the risk. You're buying the equipment or doing that marketing campaign or whatever it is, and you're working your tail off and in anticipation that it's going to give you way more than 8%. And sometimes it's going to work great and you might get 200%. Sometimes it's going to flop and you're going to get a negative something percent, right? And this is even after putting all this extra work into it, right? So I think it's very much sort of a balance. And it's like, well, if you've got that you think is almost a sure thing, that you know, like, okay, I was thinking of expanding the business to do this. I think there's like a 90% chance it's going to succeed because my existing clients are asking about it all the time. They're pretty much willing, ready to give me money to do it. But I just, you know, I had to say no because I don't have the machine or whatever, you know. So there's like a proof of concept, you know, that people, there's already a market for it. You already know people that are going to give you money once you do it. Okay, well then, yeah, you're probably going to, you know, depending on what it costs to implement that, you know, the chances are you're going to get a good ROI, assuming you don't spend too much money on the equipment or whatever, you know. But if you're just like going, doing these highly speculative things within your business, you know, these crazy long shots, well then, you know, that actually might be more risky than just doing a passive index investing strategy. So yeah, you do have to be smart about it. Definitely you can make the most money in your business, but remember too, right, that's, you're also not being very diversified in that situation either, right? You're basically putting your money into one entity as opposed to spreading out those investments to thousands of companies across the whole world, right? So you really got to sort of think that one through. So I think it's kind of a risk reward sort of scenario. And the thing is, it's like, yeah, people that are the wealthiest in the world, they have a lot of their eggs in like one or a very few baskets, but also the people that go bankrupt also do the same thing, right? Where they went all in on something and then it didn't work out and now they're done, right? So you want to be careful, right? Like diversification, there is definitely merit to that.
Yeah, you couldn't have broken it down better. That was great. And thank you so much for doing this. Cornell, is there anything else that you want to speak on in terms of personal finance that you think would help contractors like myself set themselves up for a comfortable retirement after, you know, all is said and done with their business?
Sure. Yeah, I think the main thing is it's really not as complicated as it may seem. I mean, I get it that your craft is something different than investing. And there's an entire industry built around making all of this sound really complicated because there's people that will say, I'll be your advisor, you know, I'll take your money and I'll invest it and you don't have to do anything, right? There's a lot of money to be made, right? And so people will try to make it sound like it's too complicated, that there's no way you can do it yourself. But that's just not true. I mean, there's different ways to invest. Some are more passive than others. And, you know, to be a passive index investor, it's really not that hard. It's really not that complicated. It's totally within your reach. You don't have to be a spreadsheet nerd or anything like that, especially with all, like myself, especially with all the products that are out there right now. You know, it can be pretty straightforward. One thing that I wanted to share with your audience is, like I said, I run the Kingi Financial Summit, and I had a talk that I did, a whole presentation that I did on the subject of what sort of investing style is right for you. And because there are different styles, some, you know, on the one side, you've got something that's very passive. You pay a bit more in fees, but you don't have to sort of know the ins and outs. You don't even need the spreadsheet. You know, a lot of the things are taken care of for you, and you're still paying relatively low fees, especially compared to some of those high fee mutual funds out there. And then you sort of get into the other end where it's like what I do, where I'm, you know, it's all, where it's more labor intensive, but you know, much more tax efficient, much lower fees, that kind of a thing. So there is a bit of a spectrum in terms of what kind of investing style are you. There's pros and cons of each one. You don't have to go fully advanced right away. There's different ways to sort of be a DIY investor, but ease your way into it. And so in the talk, I talk about that just, and I don't sell investments or anything like that. So I'm not, you know, trying to persuade someone to buy some ETF that I own or anything like that. I don't really have a horse in the race or anything like that. So it's, this is just more, look, these are, this is your sort of your menu and here. And so pick whatever you think is the best fit for you. And here's the pros and cons of each approach. And once you know that, you can make a better decision of what you want to do. So if anybody wants to get the talk, it's free. I made a link that you can get so you can access it pretty easily. It's buildwealthcanada.ca/investing style. So just buildwealthcanada.ca/investing style. And that will basically take you to a page and you'll be able to access that video and see it for free. And I think you'll get, you know, a lot out of it. I got a lot of good feedback on it. And I think that can help make, it can be a good primer and sort of, you know, help you get your sort of your feet wet and wrap your head around what you want to do without getting overwhelmed by the literally, you know, dozens and dozens of options that you may have. So I hope that helps.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for your time today, Cornell. This was great. Great to be able to sit down and talk with you about personal finance. Anywhere else that you want to send our audience to in terms of checking out your podcast, checking out anything that you've got going on over there?
Sure. Yeah. So the podcast, it's called Build Wealth Canada. So if you search that in whatever, whether it's iTunes or Spotify, whatever you use for your podcast, if you just search Build Wealth Canada, that will show up there. The site itself is buildwealthcanada.ca. So you can go on there. You can sign up. You can see all the different episodes there. I would say 95% of the things on the site are free. So a lot of really good content you can get there. And like I said, the video that I got ready for you guys is buildwealthcanada.ca/investing style, which I think can be a good, you know, primer for someone that knows they need to start investing for retirement, but aren't sure, okay, which style is better for me based on how much time I have and how much I want to optimize things. So definitely check that out. And CanadianFinancialSummit.com is the conference that I run. And so that's going to be towards the end of the year. But definitely if you go there now, you can sign up and you'll basically, then you'll be on the email list so that when I have free tickets, I'll basically send them to you and you'll be able to access all the talks for free. We had over 30 talks last year from some of the best experts in Canada. And so you can learn a lot about personal finance, investing, just a whole gambit of things. So, and yeah, like I said, it's all free. So definitely check it out. And yeah, thanks for having me on. This is fun.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast episode. Visit us at howtoheartscape.com for more information on this subject. Let us know what you want to learn about in future episodes by reaching out to us on our social channels. We are at howtoheartscape on Instagram and Facebook, or send us an email, contact@howtoheartscape.com. We'd love it if you subscribed for this podcast, left us a rating and review. This really helps us get this podcast out there into more people's ears and to attract even more great guests on the show to deliver you more value. We look forward to meeting with you next week on the How to Hardscape podcast.